Talo Falava, I'm Sosef Womoli. Join me for Sister Sounds, a music show dedicated to showcasing the breadth of talented female musicians and performers from across the Pacific. Sister Sounds will bring you amazing local talent mixed with the sounds and vibe our Islander audiences love by artists from across the seas as well. Search up ABC Sister Sounds to listen online or find it in the ABC Listen app.
This is an ABC podcast.
Now many young people are seeing the importance of actually stepping into this space to contribute and influence policies and frameworks that actually enables representation and inclusivity in youth voice.
Now that I'm towards the end of my 20s, I think that being in your 20s is about adding to your toolkit, having experiences, sharing experiences that help you to build your resilience and build your capacity to care for others and care for your community, care for your loved ones as you get older.
I hope to bring young people together who are like-minded to be able to share our ideas and change or combat issues that we're currently facing, like drugs, teenage pregnancies, HIV. How can we bring our young people together to ensure that, you know, that the challenges or the issues that we're facing is combated?
There's something really exciting about being in your 20s. That transition to adulthood, looking ahead with so much ambition and hope. I'm in my 30s now, but I still remember what it was like. Today, we'll meet three Pacific women in their 20s to find out about their goals, what excites them, and what expectations they face. I'm Natasha Metten. Sisters, let's talk about life in your 20s. In Papua New Guinea, there is a network of young women sharing ideas and learning to become the female leaders the country needs. It's called the PNG Young Professional Women's Network, and it was started by a university student in her 20s. Shivoni Sakme had many reasons for wanting to start the network. She wanted to engage with like-minded women and help them to rise up. It's a need she noticed all the way back in high school in Mount Hagen.
I come from a family of girls. I'm the second eldest. And before moving into the city, my dad was a nursing officer. So we've been in some remote parts of Isipik province. So it's quite a distance where basic services, you talk about access to quality education, health services, it's not that up to the standard. So like I've seen the struggles in the remote parts of Papua New Guinea. And from there, we came down back to Wewak Town, and then my dad moved up to Hagen. So we went up to Hagen. I went to school and I was surrounded by girls, and the school was mostly, you'll find that girls from different remote districts in Western Highlands Province, they come there, and it's always the mindset of, you can speak English better, so you should be the one to speak on behalf of us because teachers will listen to you or your teacher's favorite and all of that, you know. And that lack of confidence in themselves, that kind of, I've observed that I didn't want to be the only spokesperson, because if we continue to practice this kind of mindset among us women, how do we sustain ourselves in the next 50 years? So, yeah, that's like one of the reasons why I started that network. Why not we actually create a safe space where we empower one another to actually be confident in ourselves, to speak, to share ideas and our opinions, and to express ourselves in understanding the patrilineal society that we come from. To be a young woman is not easy, and to be in the Highlands region, to actually understand the dynamics in the community and your lifestyle there as well.
How old were you when you started to think about the bigger picture for women in Papua New Guinea?
I was 20, I'd say. I think I was 20 at the time. I was in my second year. I felt like I was naive. I thought I did something small, but as it grew, we started with less than 50 members and now we're 200. And this year, we've expanded our membership to other 5 institutions here in Port Moresby alone. And we've heard like interest from across the country.
And also PNG, you know, is such a young country. As a young person, what do you hope to see change for your nation?
It's a lot looking at the development progress of Papua New Guinea. It's we've come a long way, and I will not deny that we have actually progressed as a nation, but it's happening at the slowest rate. And yeah, I commend the work that has been done by our forefathers and our mothers who have, you know, taken charge and move forward. And now we see the responsibilities on us, and we need to, some of the changes that's going to happen depends on the decisions and the steps we take as young people and leaders in the space. So I think the changes that I'd like to see in PNG is, first of all, looking at the leadership and representation of our country. I'd say that, like, for the past 50 years, we've seen leadership of men in our country, and it's still a progress. But I'd say that for me, 50 years on going forward, we had this theme of reset 50 or something here. I think if we were saying reset, then can we have a reset in leadership in the parliament as well? Why not we see the next female prime minister of Papua New Guinea in Italy? We've seen the leadership of men, and not to undermine their efforts and their sacrifices that they've been made to bring our nation this far. But for now, I believe in the leadership of women as well. And not to say that I'm trying to challenge men, but I was raised in a family where my father believed in me as well. And he tells me that, you know, you go to school, don't worry about your school fees and all of that and stuff like that. When you feel that someone believes in you, you can be able to achieve things. And why not in the next 50 years, we have the first female prime minister of Papua New Guinea. Some would say that it's just a dream. It's not going to happen. I understand the political climate here in Papua New Guinea, that it's a very challenging space for women to actually thrive and to push through. But if you believe in this, believe in the future of this nation and what women can do, it takes the strongest hearts to step into the political realm in PNG to pursue politics. I know that someone will rise in this country to actually step into the space and receive the next first ever female prime minister of Papua New Guinea. I'm not losing hope. I'm hoping to see that. I'd like to see that us young people, knowing that we're the 60% population of our country, we actually take ownership of our citizenship and have that sense of duty to contribute to the development and progress of our country. Not saying that we're not doing anything. Many young people are doing great things, great initiatives. Since 2020, there's been immense increase of young people taking part in volunteering activities and creating their own foundations, their own groups and associations, and that's well recognized. I mean, I have a lot of young people, friends and connections, they're actually doing something in their communities. And if government could actually provide that support for us young people, it's not that we're lazy, it's just we do not have enough support and recognition to actually progress and contribute where we should be. And now many young people are seeing the importance of actually stepping into this space to contribute and influence policies and frameworks that actually enables representation and inclusivity in youth voice. Yeah, so it has been a work in progress for us young people as well to step into that area and contribute to development of our country. So yeah, I think I'd like to see more young people participating in that and them understanding their power of voting. It's when you look at the electoral participation of youths in Papua New Guinea as well in the general elections, many of our young people are exploited by our politicians intending candidates to their own advantage, and young people not understanding their rights, political rights, and understanding what political violence is and all of that. It's about time young people really see the importance of the percentage, the composition of the percentage of population here is 60%, and utilizing that into ensuring that they're being registered in a political role to vote and actually determine who gets into the parliament to actually make that change. So we cannot wait and say youths are the future, we are the now, and we determine who's going to sit in the parliament and represent us, because we have the power. It's just 1% of the entire population is in the parliament, and 99% as stated by the former PAU president, she's a young woman, Sophia Warp, she said, the 99% of the population is us Papua New Guineans, and 1% is just in the parliament. And if we actually understand our voting power and our right to actually vote the right person in, we can actually change our country.
What about your own career? You're studying law. What are you aspiring to do?
Yeah, I'm at the juncture of this to decide. I have been asked if I want to pursue politics or pursue my career in law. The first response I always say is, where the Lord leads me, I will go. But I don't know. I just have a sense of duty to this country. I'm so patriotic. For politics, I would say when I feel that I'm ready and I'm ready to pursue, I will. But for now, I'd like to pursue my studies and finish law school and get my degree. So along the way, I had to make sacrifices as well to ensure the network group. I'm specifically interested in international law. And yeah, if whatever, I can still pursue something in commercial. Otherwise, I'm looking at international law. And after that, I want to pursue a master's in international development studies just to bridge my passion and into my career as well, to actually have something that's sustainable to actually align for development of our countries.
That's Shivoni Sakme, founder of the PNG Young Professional Women's Network. And talk about ambition. This is a woman who is going to make a change for young people in Papua New Guinea.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
In her 20s, Tawalofa Totua has faced unemployment and her family deals with poverty. She now has a job she loves, but she had to leave university to care for her grandmother. This is the reality for a lot of Pacific Island women in her community. Aotearoa-based, with Samoan and Tongan roots, Tawalofa is still hopeful for the future. But the challenges life has thrown at her have left their mark.
In the couple of years that I was out of work, I really struggled mentally as well as financially. There is a lot of pressure on young people to succeed. And I guess when it comes to Pacific people, there is this idea of Pacific excellence and pursuing Pacific excellence and being all-rounders and having it all together and all of that on top of being a pillar in our families, which is a lot of pressure to put on, you know, our young people. And I think I experienced quite a bit of grief in terms of realizing that adulthood wasn't what I thought it would be, and the life and career that I thought I wanted wasn't for me. So I spent a couple years, I'd say at the time I would have said lost, but looking back, I think it was a really good time for me to, one, rest after working nonstop since my teens, and two, just kind of reset and figure out, what are my values? What is my purpose? What do I actually want out of life? Mm. And yeah, I guess I found my way into a community center, which aligns with who I am now and where I'm at in my life now.
When did you start to feel like an adult?
Probably when I turned 18 and I was a typical student that had moved away from home. Socially, I think it was the freedom to do what I want, buy what I want, wear what I want, eat what I want at any time. All of those freedoms combined, I think, definitely made me feel like an adult. Whether or not I actually was an adult, I don't. You could ask my mum. You could ask my family.
What are your biggest worries as a 26-year-old?
I have a lot of hope and I have a lot of joys, but I also have a lot of worries. when I look closer to home and on a personal level, I see my loved ones, my friends and my family in survival mode, living day to day, just taking each day by day. And I think a lot of that, the worries come from, I guess, the conditions created by our government, cost of living, being able to find work, being able to live meaningfully and with purpose. A lot of my friends are out of work or just struggling to get by. So I think that's probably the most pressing worry for me, living in like an intergenerational house. There's so many of us here, like grandpa. I live with my cousins, my partner, my mom, my sister, and our two dogs. And, you know, I'm grateful for our home and I'm grateful for our unit. But this is a reality that a lot of Pacific people face. And I think when it comes to home ownership or anything like that, it's just a far off, I guess, dream. And yeah, as grateful as I am for my loved ones, like I wouldn't wish like a crowded home on us. I'd love for us to live in a place where we all have our own space and where we can thrive, and I guess where we're not living on top of one another. I think that's another worry, the impacts that poverty has on my loved ones, not just my family, but my friends too. I really have seen it in the last 5 years impact everyone around me. And, you know, my family and my friends, they're not people who are, I guess, there isn't a poverty of aspiration. There's just a poverty of the material things. These are people who are extremely resourceful, creative, talented, very, very, you know, active and proactive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I come from a family of creatives. A lot of my friends, they're artists and writers. But yeah, I feel like living in poverty can get you down, especially if as things are getting harder and you've already kind of been living in hardship for a while. That is a worry for me, what the long-term effects of poverty can have on someone, especially when you have a government who isn't really willing to create the necessary support for that, or at least alleviate some of those stresses.
What excites you about being in your 20s?
Now that I'm towards the end of my 20s, I think that being in your 20s is about adding to your toolkit and having experiences, sharing experiences that help you to build your resilience and build your capacity to care for others and care for your community, care for your loved ones as you get older. And one of the things that excites me about being in my 20s is, I guess, there's still a lot of hope and there's still a lot of capacity for creating joy. We're not entirely hopeless yet, or I guess we're not entirely hardened by life just yet. And I think a lot of that has to do with our energy and wanting better and demanding better from, you know, those in power and those who've come before us. Something that excites me is the way that we, you know, really push for change and advocate for change for the future. And you see it in the way that youth mobilize online and in the streets. You see it in the way that youth do the best to create inclusive solutions and remember our why and remember our joy, and that, you know, when it comes to resisting against powers and resisting against colonialism and resisting against all the things that gets us down and all the things that we don't have control over, we are very powerful because we work together and we're willing to work together.
What are your aspirations for the future?
I would love to finish my study at some point. I started studying English literature and creative writing, but I wasn't able to complete it because we had COVID, and then my sister and I were caretakers for my nana when she got sick. And so that was our priority for a few years. So I'd love to finish my study at some point. I would love to travel the world with my loved ones. But my hope is, like, at a time where the world isn't in such strife, I'd love to continue the work that I'm doing and live purposefully. But I also would love that for everyone around me.
That's Tawa Lofa Totua. At just 26, she has so much life ahead of her. I really hope she has the opportunity and the ambition to fulfill those dreams for herself and the people she loves.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
At just 24, Fiji's Sabina Mothe has been advocating for social inclusion and people with disabilities since her teens. Her advocacy has landed her a job in that field, which she does alongside her commerce studies. But does she feel like an adult yet?
Oh my gosh, at the age of 24, I'm still trying to find myself.
Yeah.
Asking me when did I start feeling like an adult? I think probably when I first started working, being able to earn and help my family.
And what excites you about being in your 20s in Fiji today?
We're in the middle of a journey whereby we're trying to find what we want to do in life. I think being in your 20s gives you that space where you're able to decide on your own on what you want to do in life. But also, as you are figuring things out, you come to realize what you actually like and how that would look from, like, oh, here's what I want to do now. But then in 10, 20 years' time, will that same mission be the same as what I'm doing now? I told myself that I wanted to do something in disability 5 years ago. At the age of 24, this is what I'm currently doing. But I see myself in 10, maybe 15 years' time being a policymaker, working in government, making a change and helping those at the grassroots levels.
How do you hope to shape Fiji or your small part of it as a member of your generation?
I hope to bring young people together who are like-minded to be able to share our ideas and change or combat issues that we're currently facing, like drugs, teenage pregnancies, HIV. How can we bring our young people together to ensure that, you know, the challenges or the issues that we're facing is combated? And to build a future where everyone is included, build a resilient Pacific.
And what worries you as a woman in your 20s, Sabina?
Looking at the issues that we're currently facing, especially here in Fiji, the drug issue, seeing that a lot of young people have been involved in this issue and the numbers are increasing, I think the drug issue is something that worries me. If we don't combat it now and we don't educate our young people about the importance of staying away from drugs, about educating them on, you know, what are the circumstances they would face if they do drugs, then we would see a future where crime really increases. I feel like educating our young people now is important so that they are aware of what consequences they would face if they do indulge in those kind of activities.
Yeah. And as a young person, do you feel empowered to do something about this issue, or do you feel powerless?
I think I do feel empowered because I'm aware of the issues that are currently happening within the country, especially, you know, speaking about drugs, because it's always on the news. It's like come to me that, you know, having small conversations within your groups or within your community helps make people aware. And I think that would help them, you know, come to their mind and say, oh, yeah, this is a big issue now. How can we then combat it as a small group? Like, we can always converse and, you know, conversations do continue and it passes. And sometimes those conversations turn into actions. It may not be as simple as, like, in the next 2-3 days, but as you continue to engage them, they would be able to come to the, would want to, you know, be part of awareness sessions, workshops that are related to youth and youth issues, and work with organizations such as the National Youth Council of Fiji.
You have a big family and you're the oldest. What's the responsibility like now that you're in your 20s compared with when you were younger?
I think being the oldest and coming from a big family has a lot of responsibility. I mean, growing up, we were always taught to take care of our siblings, especially me. And now that I'm working, I've taken on a lot of, I would say, financial responsibility and contributed, because I still stay with my parents, I contribute a lot to the family finances, especially for school, school fees, and bills at home, and yeah, normal groceries. Apart from that, a lot of the responsibilities that my parents used to take on in school, when I was in school, was like attending parents' teachers' meetings. I think my parents have come to that stage where they trust me to attend sort of these things. And because I have like 6 younger siblings, it's kind of hard to maintain and like attend everything, considering that most of the time it's just mom who attends these things and dad works and does a lot of overtime.
What do you think people misunderstand about young women in their 20s?
Oh, I'm constantly being asked, when are you going to get married? I think people, I mean, at the age of 24, people are like, oh, you should get married. When are you going to start having kids? And I'd be like, because I come from a big family, I've always told myself, you know, I want to be financially stable. I want to be stable enough to start my own family, speaking and looking at it from the finance point of view. I've always had this thinking of, if you can afford to start your own family, if you have enough money and you're done enjoying the world and being single, then you, you know, it's time to settle down and start a family. But at this point in time, I'm nowhere close to that.
Do you have any advice for other young women who are in your generation, in their 20s now, and maybe they're getting some questions from the family as well, when are they getting married, and probably about life as well? Would you have any advice for them?
Oh, my advice is enjoy life. Enjoy life as it comes. Every day presents new adventures. You're strong, you're beautiful, and no matter what you decide, life is a journey. You learn as you go. If you fail, pick yourself up and continue.
That's Sabina Mode, a 24-year-old gender equality, disability, and social inclusion officer in Fiji, with wise words for someone so young.
Speaking to these young women about their ambitions, their dreams, and their anxieties has really filled me with hope for the future of our Pacific communities. I can't wait to see what they achieve. Thanks to my guests today, Sabina Mode, Tawalofa Totua, and Chivoni Sakne. Sisters Let's Talk is presented by me, Natasha Metten. Our supervising producer is Kim Lester. Our executive producer is Fale Angafulu Inga Stunsna. Sisters Let's Talk is an ABC Radio Australia production. We acknowledge the Yagara, Turrbal and Darumbal peoples on whose land this program is produced. I'm Tasol Nalukimu next time.